This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
I had a be everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Welcome to Night Transmissions, number 41. I'm glad you could make it. I'm Gary Clinton. And maybe I should take a moment, in case you're new to the show, to explain that what I do here is... Well, what do I do here? Mostly it's about old radio shows. Occasionally the reading of a short story. But like I said, mostly it's old radio shows. Mostly anthologies, and mostly from the United States, but not limited to the United States. In fact, tonight's first show is Beyond Midnight, which ran on the Springbok radio service of South Africa between 1968 and 1970. Beyond Midnight did some original material, but most of its shows were adaptations of very well-known, usually classic, short stories. That's the case tonight with The Signalman, which is based on a short story by Charles Dickens about a signalman who works on a lonely stretch of track and is haunted by a strange and sinister specter. This is told in such a way that you may come away with the impression that it's based on a true story. It is not. But Dickens did write the story after he had survived the Staplehurst Railroad crash in 1885. So it does seem likely that the experience may have provided a certain inspiration and brought a certain reality to the story. The thing I try not to do is talk too damn much.
Calling to him, he was standing at the door of his box with a flag in his hand furled round its short pole. One would have thought he could not have doubted from what quarter the voice came, but instead of looking up to where I stood on the top of the steep cutting over the railway line, he turned himself about and looked down the line. There was something remarkable about the man, the way he stood. Something strange, perhaps uncanny, but certainly I would have termed such a thought mere imagination then. I know now what was remarkable about that man, and even though years have passed, I still see his figure, foreshortened and shadowed, down in the deep trench, my figure high above him, so steeped in the glow of an angry sunset that I shaded my eyes with my hand before I saw him at all.
Hello, below! Is there any path by which I may come down and speak with you?
Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight by Michael McCabe.
Now, ladies, we're speaking about biotex in a series of programs, and Mrs. E.B. Granger of Gordon Road, Heathfield, in the Cape, wrote to say that she decided to try our biotex just to see if it lived up to our claims. And she said, I bought a packet, and lo and behold, it actually did just what the advert said. I'm so proud of the children's white shirts, the hankies and the underwear, that I want to say it will be Biotex for me every washing day from now on. Some of my family's accessories were left with slight stains, but now, thanks to Biotex soaking, they come out white, and the stains do go away, as you say. Now, that is a statement from Mrs. Granger of Heathfield of the Cape, and it bears out what we have been saying to you ladies ever since Biotex first came on the market. We said to you, it is different to any washing product that you've ever used before. We claim that the stubborn stains will vanish, and people like Mrs. Granger bear out our claims. Remember, Biotex.
And dismal place as ever I saw. There was an earthy, deadly smell, and little sunlight penetrated down to the line and signal box. The gloomy entrance of the black tunnel yawned. I stopped a few feet in front of the man, and suddenly he stepped back and raised his right hand. There was something in the man that daunted me.
This is a lonesome post to occupy. A visitor, I should think, must be a rarity, yes? I look down from up yonder and felt a need to come down. Signal boxes have always riveted my attention.
He directed a most curious look towards the red light near the tunnel's mouth.
The light is in your charge, is it not?
Don't you know it is?
A monstrous thought came into my mind that this was a spirit, not a man. I stepped back. But then I detected in his eyes some latent fear of me.
You look at me as if you had a dread of me.
I was doubtful whether I'd seen you before.
Where?
There. By the light.
There? My good fellow, what should I do there? Well, however be that as it may, I never was there. You may be sure of that. I've always had a fascination for railways and their workings. If it would not disturb you, may I prevail upon you to show me over your box?
Of course, sir. Come this way, sir. Come this way.
Thank you.
Come this way, sir, please. Manual labor I had next to none. I have to trim those lights, turn that iron handle now and then. Many long, dreary hours I have to spend here, so I occupy my time working at fractions and equations, problems, you know.
Is it necessary for you always to remain in this damp air down here? Even in this signal box with a fire aglow, it is somehow oppressive. Can you never rise into the sunshine?
Well, that depends upon times and circumstances.
I see.
Under some conditions, there will be less upon the line than under others. In bright weather, I go up for a change. Certain hours of the day and night, I'm freer than others. But at all times, I'm liable to be called by my electric bell.
Forgive me, but you appear better educated than your station in life calls for. I mean no offense.
When I was younger, I was a student of natural philosophy. I attended lectures, but it all came to nothing. I ran wild and was sent down. I've never risen again. But I have made my bed, sir, and now I must lie on it. It is too late to make another.
Acceptance of things for what they are. There is something to that. You almost make me believe that I have met a contented man.
I used to be. But I am troubled, sir. I am troubled.
Oh? With what? What is your trouble?
It is very difficult to impart. Very, very difficult to speak of. If you ever make another visit, I will try to tell you.
But I expressly intend to make you another visit. Say, when shall it be?
I go off early in the morning, and I shall be on guard at 10 tomorrow night.
I'll come at 11.
I'll show you my white light. That is, till you found the way. when you have found it, don't call out. And when you're at the top, don't call out.
Very well.
Let me ask you a parting question. What made you cry, hello, below there, tonight?
Heaven knows, I cried something to that effect.
No, not to that effect, sir. Those were the very words. I know them well.
Well, I spoke thus because I saw you below and wished to attract your attention.
For no other reason.
What other reason could I possibly have?
You had no feeling that they were conveyed to you in any supernatural way?
No.
Oh, good night, sir. Oh, may I inquire your name? Mine is William Bendy.
Mine is Charles Dickens.
There was something singularly peculiar about the man. Of this I was sure. And I could hardly wait the time before I could speak with him again. That he was well educated, there was no doubt. That he feared something or someone very greatly, there was no doubt either. There was something tortured about him. While we talked that first night, he was several times interrupted by the little bell and had to read off messages and send replies. Once he had to stand and display a flag as a train passed. Once or twice, while he was speaking, he turned and watched the bell, and his face drained of all color when it did not ring. I was punctual to my appointment the next night.
Good night, sir. My hand.
Good night to you, sir. And here's mine.
I have made up my mind, sir, that you shall not have to ask me twice what troubles me. Oh, please be seated.
Oh, thank you.
I took you for someone else yesterday night. That troubles me.
That mistake?
No. That's someone else.
Who is it?
I don't know.
Like me?
I don't know. I never saw the face. The left arm is across the face, and the left arm is waved, violently waved. This way. For pity's sake, clear the way. One moonlight night, I was sitting here when I heard a voice cry, hello, below there. Look out. I started up, looked from that door, and saw this someone else standing by the red light near the tunnel, waving as I just showed you. The voice seemed hoarse with shouting, and he cried, look out, look out. And then again, hello, below there, look out. I caught up my lamp, turned it on red, and ran towards the figure. Just stood in the blackness outside the tunnel. I advanced so close upon it that I wondered if he keeping the sleeve before the eyes. I ran up to it and had my hand stretched out to pull the sleeve away when it was gone.
Into the tunnel?
No. I ran into the tunnel 500 yards. I stopped and held my lamp above my head and saw the figures of the measured distance and saw the wet stains stealing down the walls and trickling through the arch. I ran out again, faster than I had run in, for I had a mortal abhorrence of the place upon me. And I looked all around the red light with my own red light. And I went up the iron ladder atop of it. And then I came down again and ran back here. I telegraphed both ways. An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong? An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong?
Oh, well. All well.
An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong?
All well. All well.
An alarm has been given. Is anything wrong?
All well.
This figure must have been a deception of your senses. A deception of your sense of sight.
figures such as you describe sometimes originate in the delicate nerves that minister to the functions of the eye. As to the imaginary voice, well, the wind, dear sir, the wind which sometimes sounds, well, in this unnatural valley, think...
That is all very well. I know about the wind and telegraph wires. I pass many long nights here, alone and watching, but I beg to remark, sir, that I've not finished my story.
Oh, I ask your pardon.
Within 6 hours after the appearance, a memorable accident on this line happened, and within 10 hours, the dead and wounded were brought along through the tunnel over the spot where the figure had stood.
Now, an effective spray-on furniture polish that gives a wax shine instantly. Johnson's Pledge. Just spray on, and your duster becomes a magnet. Picks up every speck of dust in seconds. Pledge dusts, cleans, deep waxes quickly, easily. And new, deeper wax formula Pledge will protect your furniture longer. Buy Johnson's Pledge aerosol today.
Soak, soak, that's all you have to do. Soak, soak, just for an hour or two, you'll find things look as good as new when you use new Biotex.
Amazing new Biotex soaks stubborn stains away.
Clean, clean, everything soon will be clean, clean, for all the world to see. Soak, soak, stains away easily when you use new Biotex.
Get amazing new Biotex today and let soaking do the washing.
Within 10 hours, the dead and wounded were brought along through the tunnel over the spot where the figure had stood. This was just a year ago. 6 or 7 months passed, and I had recovered from the surprise and shock when, one morning, as day was breaking, I, standing at that door, looked towards the red light and saw the spectre again.
Did it cry out?
No, it was silent.
Did it wave its arm?
No. It leaned against the shaft of the light with both hands before the face like this. Like an action of mourning I've seen in stone figures on tombs.
Did you go up to it?
I came in and sat down, partly to collect my thoughts, partly because it had turned me faint. When I went to the door again, daylight was all around me and the ghost had gone.
Ghost?
That very day, as the train came out of the tunnel, I noticed at a carriage window on my side a confusion of hands and heads. I saw it just in time to signal the driver, stop. He shut off and put his brakes on, but the train drifted past here, 150 yards or so. A beautiful young lady had died instantly in one of the compartments, and she was brought in here to the box and laid there on the floor between us. True, sir. True. Precisely as it happened, so I tell it you. Now, sir, mark this and judge how my mind is troubled. The spectre came back a week ago. Ever since, it has been there now and again by fits and starts.
At the light?
At the danger light.
What does it seem to do?
Like this. For pity's sake, clear the way.
For pity's sake, clear the way. For pity's sake, clear the way.
I have no peace or rest from it. It calls to me.
Below there! Look out! Below there! Look out! For pity's sake, clear the way.
It calls for many minutes together, in an agonized way. It rings my little bell.
I remember. Did it ring your bell yesterday evening when I was here and you went to the door?
Twice.
Why, I see how your imagination misleads you. My eyes were on the bell and my ears were open to the bell.
And if I'm a living man, it did not ring at those times. No, nor at any other time, except in the course of natural physical things when it was rung by the station communicating to you.
I have never made a mistake as to that yet, sir. I have never confused the spectre's ring with a man's. The ghost's ring is a strange vibration in the bell that it derives from nothing else. And I have not asserted that the bell stirs to the eye. I don't wonder that you failed to hear it, but I heard it.
And did the spectre seem to be there when you looked out?
It was there.
Both times?
Both times. Will you come to the door and look with me now?
I saw the danger light and the dismal mouth of the tunnel. The high, wet stone walls of the cutting. There were stars in the sky.
Do you see it?
No. It is not there.
Agreed.
By this time, sir, you will fully understand that what troubles me greatly is, what does the spectre mean?
I do not know.
What is its warning against? What is the danger? Where is the danger? There is danger overhanging somewhere on the line. Some dreadful calamity will happen. It is not to be doubted this third time after what has gone before, but surely this is a cruel haunting of me. What can I do?
At this, the poor man pulled out his handkerchief and wiped the drops from his heated forehead. I could think of nothing to say, nothing to put courage into him.
If I telegraph danger on either side of me, or on both, I can give no reason for it. I should get into trouble and do no good. They would think I was mad. Can you imagine? This is the way it would work.
Danger! Take care!
What danger? Where?
I don't know, but for pity's sake, take care!
They would say I'd gone mad and they would displace me. What else could they do?
His pain of mind was most pitiable to see. It was the mental torture of a conscientious man, oppressed beyond endurance by a responsibility involving life.
When it first stood under the danger light, why not tell me how it might be averted? Why not tell me where the accident was to happen, if it had to happen? When, on the second coming, it hit its head, why not tell me instead she's going to die? Tell them to keep her at home. If it came on those two occasions only to show me that its warnings were true, and so to prepare me for the third, why not warn me plainly now? And I, a poor signal man, on this solitary station, why not go to somebody with credit to be believed and power to act?
Bendy, William, you cannot blame yourself for anything. You must not become so agitated. Whoever so thoroughly discharges his duty as you do must do well. It must needs be comfort to you to know full well that you understand your duty perfectly. The fact remains, I know that you do not understand these confounded appearances, but you must not take on so. I will not insult you by trying to reason you out of your belief.
Thank you, sir.
I left him at 2 o'clock that morning. I'd offered to stay the night, but he would not hear of it. As I climbed the path up, I looked down to the red light. I did not like it. I knew full well I should not sleep sound if my bed were under it. Nor did I like the two sequences of the accident and the dead girl. I wondered how I ought to act. I knew the man to be painstaking, vigilant, and although in an inferior position, he held a most important trust. How long, with his mind as it was, would he remain to execute this trust with precision, I wondered. I resolved to accompany him to the wisest medical man in those parts and to take his opinion. Something told me that it would be most treacherous to communicate all that the signalman had told me to his superiors. It might well cost him his living. A
change in his time of duty would come round next night, he had informed me. He would be off an hour or two after sunrise, and on again soon after sunset. I had appointed to return accordingly. Walked out early to enjoy it. The sun was not yet quite down when I traversed the field path near the top of the deep cutting. I would extend my walk for an hour, I said to myself, a half an hour on and half an hour back, and it would then be time to go to my signalman's box. Before pursuing my stroll, I stepped to the brink and mechanically looked down from the point from which I had first seen him. I cannot describe the thrill that seized upon me when, close at the mouth of the tunnel, I saw the appearance of a man with his left sleeve across his eyes, passionately waving his right arm. A nameless horror that oppressed me quickly passed when, close at the mouth of the tunnel, I saw that this appearance of a man was a man. There was a little group of men standing further away, and this first one seemed to be rehearsing the gesture he made, the gesture the signalman had described so vividly. The danger light was not yet lighted. Against its shaft, a little low hut, entirely new to me, had been made of some wooden supports and tarpaulin. It looked no bigger than a bed. I descended the path with all the speed I could muster.
Hello! Hello, what is the matter? What has happened?
Signalman, killed this morning, sir.
Not the man belonging to that box.
Yes, sir.
Not the man I knew.
You will recognize him, sir, if you knew him.
He raised the tarpaulin covering from the small structure I had observed from above.
His face is quite composed.
How did this happen?
He was cut down by an engine, sir. No man in England knew his work better. But somehow he was not clear of the outer rail. It was just at broad day. He'd struck the light and had the lamp in his hand, and as the engine came out of the tunnel, his back was towards her. She cut him down. That man drove her and was showing how it happened. Show the gentleman, Tom.
Well, coming round the curve in the tunnel, sir, I saw him at the end, like as if I saw him down a perspective glass. Well, there was no time to check speed, and I knew him to be very careful. But as he didn't seem to take heed of the whistle, I shut it off. And as we were running down upon him, I called to him as loud as I could call.
What did you say?
Say, sir? Why, I said, below there. Look out. For pity's sake, clear the way. Below there! Look out! Look out! For pity's sake, clear the way! Come on, look out! For pity's sake, clear the way! I never left off calling to him, sir. I put my arm before my eyes so as not to see, and I waved this arm right to the last. But it was no use.
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soap and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.
Yeah, okay. This is the first break for today. I know. You don't need them. But I need them. I guess.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And this is the truth. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not.
Count Octavio Morel of Rome, Italy, never used a comb or brush on his hair. He relied solely on rudimentary muscles in his scalp. He could comb and part his hair by willpower alone, believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about one of the strangest religious celebrations in the world.
In the war news for November the 4th of 1942...
This is the BBC Home and Forces program. This is Bruce Belfridge. Here's some excellent news which has come during the past hour in the form of a communique from GHQ Cairo. It says, the Axis forces in the Western Desert, after 12 days and nights of ceaseless attacks by our land and air forces, are now in full retreat. It's known that the enemy's losses in killed and wounded have been exceptionally high. Up to date, we've destroyed more than 260 German and Italian tanks and captured or destroyed at least 270 guns.
Once a year, in the morning of the 12th day of the third month, which is regarded as the Prophet's birthday, the Grand Sharif of Cairo rides to the Sadia Mosque, his principal house of prayer. In his path, the parishioners lie on the ground in the closest formation, with legs extended and arms clasped beneath their foreheads. His horse walks over the prostrate bodies. However, it's very rare for anyone of his living carpet to be hurt, believe it or not.
Lights out, everybody.
And now, from December the 9th of 1936, Arch Obler tells us...
It is later than... you think.
This is Arch Obler bringing you another in our series of stories of the unusual. And once again, we caution you, these lights out stories are definitely not for the timid soul. So we tell you calmly and very sincerely, if you frighten easily, turn off your radio now.
Yes, Adelina, I am here.
Don Camilla. Don Camilla.
Yes, she'll be here any moment. I sent for her. You must not talk, Adelina. You're strange. Come, Frank. We'll go see if Dr. Miller's coming. Yeah. So, now I can breathe.
But Herbert, Dr. Miller, why do you send for her? What can she do?
Do not be a fool. Did you not hear her? But the old woman. Dr. Miller. Dr. Miller. I tell you, she drove me crazy with it. Until finally, I sent for Dr. Miller.
Yeah, but will she come?
Who knows? And if she does come, what difference can it make? The old woman, worn-out machine. 84 years is long enough. Ah, perhaps that is the doctor now.
I will go with you. I cannot believe that. She would come here.
In a moment, we shall see. Yes, I am coming.
Adelina is here?
Yes, Dr. Miller. You do not recognize me, perhaps. I am the mayor, old Albert.
Oh, yes.
Will you honor my house by entering?
Of course.
I did not know if you would come. You are so busy. She is such an old woman.
She is a friend of my mother's. Where is she?
This way, please.
Albert.
Oh, yes. Doctor, if you will permit me. This is my good neighbor, Frank.
It is a great honor meeting you, Dr. Miller.
Adelina, you say she is dying. Why do you keep me from her?
Oh, no, Doctor. Do not even think such a thing. Come this way. In here, Doctor. In here. You hear? She talks with her last breath so pitifully. It is a great pity. For one as old as she, it would take heaven's own intervention to
please
stop.
Please go now.
Huh? Oh, yes, yes, of course, Doctor. Anything you say.
Adelina. Try to open your eyes. It is I, your old friend, Dr. Mueller.
Dr. Mueller.
Yes, I came as quickly as I could.
Dr. Mueller. I'm right here.
Yes. Here is my hand. My friend, your arm pain.
My son. My youngest. In 2 days, he will be here. Oh, Dr. Mueller, I am so tired. And I want to die. But not yet. Not yet.
No. No, you must rest.
Not yet. Not yet. I tell you, I must not die. Not yet.
Adelina, please.
My youngest. He comes. I must see him once more. I must not die. Not yet. Not yet.
Oh, my friend.
You call me friend, Doctor. You, my only friend. Have pity.
What can I do?
Give me life. Give me life with a few more hours until my son arrives. You are so wise. A few more hours. Say you can give me life.
Life.
I am so old. I know. The blood is cold and worn. But in your wisdom, you must know some way. You keep a little warmth within me. A little warmth until he comes.
I don't
talk, friend. Do not turn away from me. I beg you. Have pity. Help me. Hold me. I have fought so long. Now you must help me, Dr. Mueller. A few more breaths until my son.
Yes, I will help you. You must not speak. You must use all your strength in listening and trying to understand what I'm going to say. Good friend, what I'm about to tell you is so strange that I almost dare not speak. And yet if I'm to help you as you ask, I must speak. No, just listen. As you've said yourself, death is very close to you. And since yours is the disease of old age, of a body worn with long years of living, there's nothing that medicine can do for you. Except perhaps to ease your leaving of this life.
You said.
And I will help you. But what I'm about to do to you is something I should not do. Listen, good friend. Try to understand. For many years, I have worked with little white mice attempting to discover the true nature of cancer. For many years, good friend. And while in these studies, I've made a discovery. A discovery which goes beyond all understanding.
Help me.
In working on the little creatures, I discovered that when an organism has lived its full span of years, the cells within the body become aged, worn, and become what I call a fibroblast. Now I've discovered that by injecting the extract of the tissues... Oh, she dies. What should... I promised her.
Oh.
I must do it. I must. My instrument case. I must. I promise. The hypodermic. My hands. The liquid, so green. If it only gives her a little more of life. My hands must be sure. Needle. Deep into her heart. No, no, you must live. Only a few seconds more until I... There. Deep. Done. No. It will never work. My experiment's foolishness, the reaction on the mice, only the illusion of my hopes. And to do what I've done to this old woman. Her dying flesh. Her pulse almost gone. Oh, forgive me, old friend. In your death. No. Not dead. Lips. Cheeks so red. Eyes open. So bright. So fresh. So young.
Doctor.
No.
Doctor!
No. It cannot be. No.
Dr. Miller,
no.
Hold up. What is it?
No.
Doctor, there's the old woman. There's Adelina. Who?
It is
this
I.
Young woman. Who?
I. Adelina. Look at me. My arms. Warm. Live. My cheeks. I can feel them. Round. Full like they were years ago. She has made me young. She did it. She. Me, old Adelina. Young. Young.
Dying old man, young again.
My face.
Oh, doctor, all the states will know of this miracle. You have conquered death. We shall live forever.
Oh, no. What have I done?
What is it? What do you want?
Doctor, it is I, Frank. Oh, such news. He is coming here.
Hmm?
I tell you, he comes here. The mayor is bringing him. He refused to wait until morning.
And who is this impatient one that has to see me at midnight?
It is His Excellency.
His Excellency?
Yeah.
Frank, what are you saying?
I tell you, he is His Excellency. Oh, his last name. I never can remember names. His picture, you see his picture everywhere. He is coming here, doctor, to see you. The mayor is bringing him.
Oh, Frank. Thank you, Fiend. Thank you.
Oh, no, I tell the truth, doctor. The great one has heard of the miracle of Adelina.
What are you saying?
Yeah, the miracle. There's a resurrection from the grave. I hear him talking to the mayor. He is coming to see you. There. You see, I tell you the truth.
Open up in there.
Aren't you going to open the door?
What else is there to do? Open it, sir.
Yeah. What an honor.
Oh, Frank, where is she?
I am here, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, I did not see you standing there in the shadows. Doctor, a great honor has come to you. Yes, a great honor. Most distinguished visitor our little community has ever known. Yes, a most distinguished...
Excuse me, you cackling old fool.
Oh, yes, your excellency. I only thought... That is to say, I only meant...
Stand aside, you fat old fool. Dr. Müller, you know who I am?
Yes, your excellency.
I am a man of few words. I will speak plainly. I want plain answers.
I am at your service, Your Excellency.
Then tell me quickly. How did you do this miracle?
Miracle?
He means Adelina. His Excellency means...
Close your mouth. I am talking. Go, all of you.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Now then, Doctor. I ask you for an answer. How did you give that old woman back her youth? Well, don't stand there staring at me. I want an answer. How did you do it?
There is nothing to say.
Nothing to say?
No.
Do you realize to whom you are speaking? Now, there's no doubt you do not. In your unfortunate isolation, you have failed to do your duty in having the proper knowledge of who is important to the state. All right, I will educate you. I am Joseph Brown, Doctor of Philosophy and member of the Department of Propaganda.
I know of you.
So? Then speak plainly. There is no use hiding facts. I've seen the woman with my own eyes. Your fat mare took me to her. I've talked to neighbors, friends. I know that she was worn out, aged, dying.
Now she's young again. Speak, and speak plainly. How did you do it?
And if I tell you?
If you tell me. My dear doctor, this is your house?
Yes.
Your experiments in that room?
My laboratory.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Your Excellency.
Come here.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Open that door.
At once, Your Excellency, at once.
Into your laboratory, my fine doctor. I follow. The rest of you stay out here. Now we will be quite alone. So, now we can speak plainly. Ah, so this is where you do your work, my fine doctor?
Yes.
What have we here? Well, mice. Little white mice. How charming.
I use them in my experiments.
And what are your experiments?
The hereditary factor in cancer.
Cancer? So you persist in lying to me. Doctor, they tell me you are a very clever woman. Yet I assure you, you will be most stupid if you persist in keeping the truth from me. I am not a violent man. So I ask you very calmly to be sensible and speak freely. Now then, the miracle of youth. How did you do it?
I am not quite sure myself.
That is no answer. Well, there are other methods. Mr. Mayor.
You want me, Your Excellency?
Come here.
Yes, sir. Anything you say, Your Excellency.
Mr. Mayor, how old are you?
Your Excellency, I'm not quite sure. In my 50s, I believe.
All right, you will do. Bear your arm.
My arm?
You heard me. All right, doctor. Give him the injection.
Injection? Me?
You will kindly shut your mouth. You heard my order, doctor. Do as I say.
The injection... to him?
Yes, yes, to him. I spoke plainly enough.
But I can't do that.
Why not? You have more of the liquid.
Yes, but don't you understand? It's permanent reactions on the human mechanism. I don't know that... And so I dare not use it.
But that woman, she is young.
Yes, but who knows what other...
All right. All right. That's quite enough. Doctor, I have come a long way to investigate a rumor. Now I am here, and you will do as I say.
If I refuse?
Do not speak like a child. I am not a violent man. And yet, doctor, it would be a pity to lose your life work, Do not stand there. I am growing quite impatient. Yes, and the mayor, too, grows impatient.
Oh, Your Excellency, what are you going to do to me? I am an old
man.
Hold
your mouth and bare your arm, you old fool. Well, doctor?
I am ready.
Excellent.
Oh, doctor, what?
Hold your tongue, I tell you. Proceed, doctor.
Oh.
It will not hurt, Albert.
So, how simple. The needle in, you press the plunger.
It is done. How do you feel, my friend?
Yes, yes. How is it, old man? What's going on inside of you?
I...
Look, his flesh...
begins to glow like hers did.
The wrinkle's gone. He's back straightening.
It happened again.
A miracle. Speak, man. Speak.
Your Excellency. My head. It hurts. My blood rushing through my veins. Doctor, why do you look at me so? My voice sounds so strange in my ears.
Look. Look in the mirror ahead of you, you old fool.
Yes. No, it cannot be. My face, young. I'm young again. Doctor, look at me. Young again. Young again. I'm young again.
Young again.
Oh, my muscles are strong. Look. I jump. I dance. And let me out of here. Everyone shall see.
Yes. Go. Go.
Frank, everyone. Look. I'm young. I'm young again. She made me young.
So, it makes them young again.
Does it?
Are you blind? Didn't you see it just as I saw it? Wrinkled flesh, young, twisted back straight. I tell you, a gift to the state from heaven.
Or hell.
All science is mad, and all scientists are madmen. I've often said that. Only we who think with our blood think clearly and recognize our destiny.
I don't understand.
You will receive many honors for this, doctor. Oh, but first, you have kept an accurate record of your experiments?
Yes.
May I ask where?
Notebook. This.
Excellent. In the name of the state, I asked you to give it to me.
To you?
Yes.
What would you do with it?
I told you. There are some of us who recognize our destiny. I recognize this as mine.
What?
With this power in my possession, think. Think what wonders I can perform. An army of youth. Everlasting youth. An army invincible.
Oh, no.
Old men young and young men forever young. An army without end sweeping the earth. And I, yes, I, the leader.
No. No, you cannot use it for that.
Cannot? Ah, yes, I understand. You are thinking that there is another leader. Well, Doctor, at this moment I can speak quite frankly with you. Yes, there is a leader, and they bow their heads to him, the masses. But I will tell you this. It was my brains, my catchwords, my slogans that taught them to look on him as the invincible. And so, what they shout for is really a man who exists only in me. Now perhaps I can take my rightful place. He's an emotional old woman, Leland. While I know the wonder and the power of the soft word. With your elixir of youth to tempt men, I shall become quite invincible. With an army invincible. You do not speak? All right. Then do give me the notebook.
You cannot make men young to kill. Make them young to live.
The notebook, Doctor.
No, I will not give it to you. My work has been to preserve life, not to destroy it.
The notebook?
No, you can't have it. Not for soldiers, do you hear me? Not for soldiers.
As you wish, Doctor. I told you, I am not a violent man. Good night.
Head off.
Yes, Your Excellency.
Go in there. She has a notebook in her hand. Bring it to me quickly.
Yes, Your Excellency.
What a pity. The good doctor. She has committed suicide.
Report to medical officer at once. Company J, Sam Q, report to medical officer at 12 o'clock. Reserve officers orders, report to medical officer within 3 minutes.
Your regiments, General, they do not quite know what is happening to them,
eh? It does not matter, Your Excellency. They obey orders.
Mm. Come, let us go into your office.
As you say.
Now then, we can speak most comfortably. How many men have been treated?
50 picked ones.
You are satisfied with the results?
It was beyond belief.
And so you will join me?
Anything you say. When does it happen?
He gives one of his infernal orations next week in the old hall. With you and the others to help me, I assure you his old womanish ravings will end right there.
You'll speak of others.
You doubt they will join me?
Oh, no. No, all men will follow you.
Naturally.
To think that you should have made such a discovery.
I sometimes surprise myself.
And you alone know the formula?
Yes. That is why I am so sure of you and the others. It will be most pleasant to know the delights of youth forever, my friend.
Have you taken the injection yet?
I? No. No, I decided to wait until the results of our test cases were quite complete. 50 human guinea pigs. Now that I am certain of the success, yes, I will do it. At once.
Eh?
My injection here. Have it all ready. Hypodermic filled. Very well filled. How interesting it looks in its case, General. My immortality.
Yes.
You would like your youth again now, too?
Oh, I am not ready.
There's nothing to fear. You see? I pinch the skin in my arm. The needle bites for a moment. So, it is done.
Do you feel pain?
Huh? Pain? No. No, no, no. Only a strange warmth in my veins. I feel my blood seems to run swiftly.
Your face.
What is it?
Your face. It is changing.
Yes. Yes, I feel it. I'm young. A young man again. I told you. Young.
You will pardon me.
How dare you? Come out.
No. Let him come in. Nothing disturbs a young man. Nothing. Well, what is it you want? Well, how thoughtful of you to bring me such a beautiful young woman.
Yeah, it is about her that I have come, Your Excellency. About her and the mayor.
The mayor?
Yeah, he is waiting outside.
But who are you? Oh, yes, I remember you.
Yeah.
You are from the village where... Ah, This woman, the first to be rejuvenated.
Yeah, Your Excellency, Adelina, the very first. The villagers, they send me to ask you. You will help her and the mayor, won't you, Your Excellency?
Help? What are you talking about? Yeah. Look at her, the picture of youth. She was dying of old age, but look at her now, young, beautiful.
Yeah, Your Excellency, so sad. Young, as you say, beautiful. But the devil's brew Dr. Miller put into her veins. Listen to what it has done to her.
What?
Speak, Adelina, speak.
No. No.
Yeah.
No, I won't. I won't.
Stop
No.
it. Make her stop.
No.
I order you, make her stop.
Quiet, Adelina, quiet, my friend.
Tell me, you. Tell me, what's wrong with the woman?
I tell you, the devil's brew, the stuff that makes her young.
Speak, I command you, speak.
A thousand pardons, Excellency, I'm trying to. It made her young. It made her body young. But day after day, her mind, it has kept on growing younger.
No, you lie. You lie. Not the injection. It was something else. Something else that did it.
No. I tell the truth. The mayor. He did the same thing to the mayor. The injection.
No, it can't be the injection. No. General, what? Why do you look at me?
You took an injection. A large one.
Get out. Out, all of you, out! You can't frighten me, get out! Get out, you lie! It was not the injector, it was something else. I'm all right, my mind is strong! Out! Out! Yes, it was lies. It cannot be the injection, no. Some strange disease, yes. I'm all right. I must be all right. Yes, I'm strong. My mind is strong. I'm young. I'm not a violent man. No. I am young. My mind is strong. How can the mind grow young and the body stay old? It cannot be.
My voice. My head. It spins. Younger. What was I saying? Younger. The room spinning. Where am I? My voice. Strange. These clothes. Soldier clothes.
I am a soldier. I am a soldier. My head. Mother. My head. Where am I? I'm with my mother. My head. It hurts. Mother. Mama.
Well, whatever the case is, it is now the case that we have a case of the breaks. Next up is an episode of CBS Mystery Theater for November the 26th of 1979, Strange New Tomorrow. The CBS Radio Mystery Theater, hosted by the fine actor E.G. Marshall, did manage to bring back the great days of mystery, suspense, and drama. It aired daily between 1979 and 1973. All except for the last year were hosted by Marshall. The last year saw Tammy Grimes taking over as host. The Mystery Theater did occasionally venture into science fiction, which is the case tonight. I wish I could be more unqualifiedly enthusiastic about tonight's show. Oh, I think it's pretty good, but the theme and the amount of scientific literacy displayed in this particular episode seem more appropriate to the 1950s to me than the age of Star Wars and Star Trek and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Now, that doesn't mean that this is a bad show. It's not. But you are going to have to kind of put your brain in neutral a little bit and just let it coast and not be too annoyed when they misuse terms like galaxy, using it interchangeably with star system. When they talk about human beings living on a Jupiter-sized planet, don't ask yourself, how's that possible? Wouldn't a Jupiter-sized planet be just really too damn big? And wouldn't gravity be really, really heavy? I mean, what is it? Is it a planet made out of Nerf? What is it? Is it a planet made out of custard? And if it's custard, what exactly are the people living on? Well, you know what I mean. This is the kind of stuff you just kind of have to let go.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Have you ever played the game of wondering where and when, if you had the choice, you would have picked to spend your life? Most of us probably might settle for today and where we are. The more romantic among us might opt for some favorite era we view through rose-colored glasses, the Greek or Roman Empire, the Renaissance, Shakespeare's England. But the adventurers would turn their eyes to the future, the unimagined and the unimaginable. What might some distant tomorrow be like?
You mean wipe out any inhabitants that are there, General Varden?
Exactly, Dr. Tremaine.
With the robots I build for you? Suppose I refuse?
That's a lovely wife you have, Doctor. A little young for you. But then so exquisitely desirable all the more. It would be a pity for anything to happen to her.
Our mystery drama, Strange New Tomorrow, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Ian Martin and stars John Beale and Terry Keane.
about to bring you a time that none of us will ever know. Or our children. Or our children's children. Or generations of them to come. This is a time long after the Second Hundred Years' War, when the world went mad and burned the green and fruitful earth to barren cinders, when the population was reduced by two-thirds, leaving the survivors to a virtual handful. This is a time of an absolute autocracy, a state in which every individual is born by selective breeding and condemned by the state to function only in the area prescribed for him or her. This could be what the future will be like.
Ralph?
Yes, Una, dear?
It's time for your medicine.
Oh, you don't have to act like a wife when we're alone. It can wait.
I want you to take it. You need it.
Well, I may need it, but it won't help. In a minute.
What are you looking at?
The return of the conquering hero. Leader of our regiments, defender of the faith, General Mark Barton. Homeward the heroes from the hunt. Pirates and freebooters all. With their living plunder. With not one grain of moral sense. And not the compassion of one heart among them.
Have they been on another...
Let me close the windows. I don't even want the wind from their exhaust to touch me. You were saying, my dear?
I was just asking if they'd been on another galactic raid.
Beyond doubt. More and more frequently. Varden and that evil young man who's elevated himself to Emperor are getting desperate, as well they should. Emperor Condor is sitting on an uneasy throne.
You think he might be overthrown?
Oh, not from within. As long as he has his robot army to protect him. And as long as fresh blood is brought in to keep them from extinction, the people will still cling to hope. Although there isn't any.
Hope for what?
Oh, it's a long story, my child. A long history. And I don't feel like telling it tonight.
Of course you mustn't. You look tired and you... Oh, Ralph, you look so ill.
I'm suffering from a chronic complaint, old age. Dr. Ralph Tremaine, professor of cybernetics, emeritus.
But you are not retired.
No. Not quite yet. There are things I have to finish. You hear that?
What, Ralph?
The silence. The ship has landed. Now they'll feed the poor souls, whoever they are, to the lions.
Your Majesty.
Greetings, General Barton. You're returned, I see.
Bringing with me another glorious victory to lay at your Majesty's feet.
Oh, spare me all that nonsense. Are you successful in your task?
You can see for yourself if you'll allow me to tune in the viewing screen.
Very well. You were gone an unconscionable time.
These missions get more and more difficult.
Why?
Let me show you the fruits of this one first. There. It's coming into focus now. There's the latest catch.
Mm-hmm. And where are they from?
Rubos, a planet in the ninth galaxy.
You had to go so far afield?
As I said, it becomes more difficult all the time. Galaxy after galaxy is patrolled by police craft seeking us out. Only the black light envelope has kept our identity secret this long. Even then, I must slip through time warp after time warp to avoid discovery and recognition.
What do they expect? We must raid them to keep our race alive, to maintain enough population to keep the whole fabric of existence viable.
You know my answer to that, Majesty.
No, General, no. I don't want to listen to that now. Perhaps these bodies milling about down in the square there will be the answer at last. Yes, tell me more about the planet.
Rubos? It's a large planet, about the size of Jupiter in our solar system. Its distance in relation to size is approximately the same as our planets from our sun. The climate and the animal life is also analogous.
Well, they look healthy enough and similar enough. Intelligence?
Their average IQ is a good deal higher than ours.
What?
And their scientific capabilities considerably more advanced. We were lucky to make our raid and escape unnoticed. We were almost intercepted. Their communications must be magnificent. We were in a very remote part of what is a very large planet. And yet they were almost on us as we took off.
Well, were you recognized?
I hope not. Unless they have instruments to pierce the blacklight curtain. But I think we got away.
Excellent, excellent. Then I won't scold you for the handful that you've brought me. They seem to be first-rate specimens. Next time I'll...
Emperor Condor.
Yes, General Varden?
There will be no next time.
What?
No more raids. They are too dangerous.
But you know we must have a constant supply of people of healthy bodies so we can weed out the poison that eats at most of us and destroys us.
We will never weed it out.
But it can be bred out once we find the right strain.
Emperor Conda, listen to me. You think the radiation is carried inside us, bred in our genes. I don't believe it is. I think every generation reinfects itself from the earth of this planet, the seas that wash it, the space around it.
No, that can't be, General Varden. It's countless generations since the Holocaust.
And it will be countless eternities before this planet is safe again for anything but robots.
Don't mention those abominations to me.
Why do you hate them so? They are the perfect slave. Without them, you would have no army, no palace guards, and internal police to hold the common people in check.
In check from what?
From ripping you and me and the rest of the ministers apart. No, there is only one hope.
That is?
We must abandon Earth and resettle elsewhere.
Don't you think that hasn't been thought of eons and eons ago? But we are welcome nowhere, the pariahs of the universe.
We do not ask. We will take...
With what? I can't find enough healthy bodies to run basic services, let alone conscript an army.
We do not need an army, except mine.
Back to those obscene robots again. There aren't enough of them.
They can be built, if you will allow me to reopen the planet.
No.
What are you afraid of? That somehow they'll take over?
I don't know. Yes. Yes, I...
Don't worry. They're nothing but a series of relays, transistors, printed circuits. They are programmed by men.
I still don't trust them.
Give me leave, Your Majesty, to go to Dr. Tremaine and have him start on blueprints for a new and improved model robot built only for war.
No, not yet. Give me time to think. First, let me find among these slaves you've brought back one woman who may give me an untainted child.
Yes?
Quickly. I must not be seen. Close the door.
Who are you?
I am General Mark Varden. Close it.
Forgive me, General.
Who are you?
I am Una.
You are a very beautiful woman, Una.
Am I?
Yes. Where did you come from? How...
Ah, General Varden. To what do we owe the honor of your visit to me? Oh, I see you've met my wife.
Your wife?
Oh, yes, of course. I'd forgotten. The wedding took place while you were on your cruise.
My mission, Dr. Tremaine.
Ah, yes. Mission. Did you have success?
I flatter myself I did. I have urgent business with you, Doctor.
Shall we go to my study?
For what I wish to talk with you about, your laboratory would be more appropriate. I know my way.
Ralph, what is it?
The last place I wanted him to be. Oh, well, with a little luck, we may be all right.
Close the door, Dr. Tremaine.
Very well. And I'll turn off all this apparatus.
No. I prefer to take no chance that what I have to say might be overheard.
Well, at least let me lower the volume.
Fascinating. What are you brewing here, Doctor? What are these machines?
Computers, oscillators, electronic microscopes, calculators. all the impedimenta of anyone who studies cybernetics. The scientist studies only to learn how little he really knows.
But you know how to build robots.
Yes, but we're not building anymore.
I want you to be ready. I want you to start building me a prototype designed only for war.
Does the Emperor know of this?
It is better the Emperor doesn't know of everything.
Oh, I'd have to have his permission first before I embarked on this. I wouldn't want to risk offending him.
You will be far worse off offending me, Doctor.
General, I am an old man. I haven't long to live, so threats are of little use against me.
I wouldn't be quite so sure, my dear Dr. Tremaine. I'm going to take over another planet in some other galaxy. A clean planet, untouched by deadly radiation like ours.
Take over? You mean wipe out any inhabitants that are there?
Exactly.
With the robots I build for you?
That's it. You are going to build me the army to fight it.
And if I refuse?
That is a lovely wife you have, Dr. Tremaine.
No.
A little young for you. It would be a pity for anything to happen to her.
You wouldn't dare.
Do not try me. One whisper to the Emperor of my plans. Any attempt from you to hinder them. Any refusal to do my will to the best of your ability. And I will have your wife destroyed and buried in a forgotten grave. Well, Dr. Tremaine, are we partners or not?
The General's eyes are chips of granite, and Dr. Tremaine knows this man only too well to doubt that he means every word he says. Mark Barton may be human, but he is as soulless as any robot. What choice can the old man make? I shall return shortly with Act Two. Perched on the edge of a table in Dr. Tremaine's laboratory, as he awaits the old man's answer, General Mark Varden lets his hawk eyes roam idly about the room. It is the ordered clutter of a busy scientist who is half chemist, half electronics wizard. His eye has just fallen on a large black box, almost like a coffin, when the old man speaks.
You're right, General Varden. I have no choice.
I was sure you would see it my way, Doctor. Such a ravishingly beautiful woman. Where did you find her?
She was one of the group you brought back from Cygnus 3 on your last mission.
I overlooked her all the long journey home.
I'm afraid you did. And I asked the Emperor for her hand the moment I found her.
The Emperor gave her to you.
I'm unmarried, a widower. I had the right to ask, to demand.
I'm surprised he acceded the way he feels about your robots.
Oh, don't be too surprised, no matter what he says. Only I can build them and program them, now that all the others are gone. He needs his palace guard to shield him from you. So, he needs me.
Nobody else is clever enough to build or service them?
That will be taken care of very soon. In the meantime, don't push me too far.
My dear doctor, I have no intention of subjecting you to any pressure now that we are agreed. I ask only the reassurance of being able to drop in from time to time to get progress reports.
Well, when I have some working drawings ready, I'll send for you.
But carefully. Till I have sold His Majesty on the necessity of my plan.
I have an assistant in the lab. A young man named Mac. No one knows him at court. I'll send him.
Mac what?
Just Mac. That's all you need to know.
I'll leave standing orders for him to be admitted. Now I must leave you. Oh, by the way.
Yes, General?
You say you never stopped studying. Just what have you been working on while I've been gone?
Oh, I don't think it would interest you very much.
On the contrary.
You're quite sure you haven't been developing some sort of special robot for His Majesty that just might upset the balance of power?
What would make you think that?
This curious box, big enough to hold someone my size, that looks like a coffin. The lid.
It's locked.
Naturally. What's inside this curious box?
That box is lined with lead. Inside it are a group of highly radioactive rocks, which I use in certain biological experiments that I've been conducting to try to neutralize their effect on the body.
Then I shall give it a wide berth. I wouldn't want to try their effect on mine. If I can believe you.
Well, I'll give you the key, and you may open it. But only after I'm out of this room and out of this house. Well, come in.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Ralph, but it's time for your medicine.
General? That's quite all right, Mrs. Tremaine. I was just about to leave. Yes, the Emperor made you an extraordinary present. She's ravishingly lovely. Keep her that way, Doctor, at all costs. No, don't worry. I can see myself out.
Is he really gone?
What a dreadful, frightening man.
He's all of that and more. I just had my medicine. I don't need any more.
It was an excuse to come in. I knew you needed me.
How?
I don't know, except I always do. It's like a wave, a shudder, the pulse of some electric alarm. What did that awful man mean about the Emperor giving me to you?
No, I don't want you to worry your pretty head.
But I do worry. What do you think it's like not knowing anything about yourself or your family, where you came from or who your friends might have been? Just waking up suddenly at the age of 25 and just being.
Well, you just have no memories.
But why?
It's a sort of amnesia.
Did I fall? Hit my head?
No, you... Look, I'll tell you what I just told the general. You know this shipload of unfortunate people he just brought back?
That he captured as slaves?
What he has condemned them to is tantamount to slavery. And worse.
But why? Why did he steal people away from their homes?
Because sooner or later, everyone on this planet dies of a form of sickness caused by nuclear radiation. The Emperor believes it is transmitted through the genes, and that by selective breeding to healthy stock, it can eventually be neutralized.
Can it?
No. Even if it were possible, this whole globe is one mass of radioactivity that would reinfect everyone again.
Has it infected me?
No. And it never will. I promise you that.
But the others, all those poor women I saw on the viewing screen.
They'll be sold to any male who's not yet given any signs of having the sickness.
What a terrible, cruel man to try to drag the rest of the universe down because of our misfortune.
And it's all so futile. The Emperor won't believe it, but the cancer is already growing within him. If he had laid eyes on you, he undoubtedly would have chosen you as one of his consorts.
How did I escape? Oh. Is that what you told the general, that you took me instead?
That's what I told him.
But I have been no real wife to you.
Oh, my dear, sweet girl. The marriage was only so I could hide you away and keep you safe. I think of you as a daughter. I had only one wife, and she died a long time ago.
Of the sickness?
Yes. And you know something? You were created in her image. You look exactly like her.
Oh, Ralph, I do love you. And I feel so close to you. And I want you to know how strong my love is.
That's all I want to hear. Give me all of it you want, but as a daughter, the child I never had.
Because you were afraid that...
Because if I couldn't give life,
I refuse to bring anything into this world. You will be meeting someone soon. He'll be working with me, and it will be impossible to conceal his presence from you. He's someone very special, and I want you to understand about him.
Is it a coffin?
Oh, no. It was more like a cradle.
I'm afraid suddenly.
There's nothing to be afraid of. You'll see.
It's a young man. And he's beautiful.
Well, I hope not. Handsome is a better word.
Perhaps. But is he dead?
Oh, no. This young man can't die in the ordinary sense. He is, in a way, immortal.
I don't understand you.
Well, this young man isn't a human being. He's a humanoid.
A humanoid?
Yes, a simulacrum. Something that's formed in the likeness of a human being.
Oh, you mean like a mannequin or a dummy?
Very far from that. I mean, he is identical in almost every respect with a human. And he will perform, act, simulate almost every human control function. Only in Mac's case, the motive forces are mechanical and electronic.
Mac?
That's what I call him. It's a sort of an acronym for what he is. Mechanoelectric activated computer.
You built him, made him, created him?
Yes.
Oh, how horrible.
Oh, I was hoping that you wouldn't react like that. It's the last way I wanted you to feel.
But he's nothing but a machine.
Oh, a lot more than that.
How can he be? It be. It's just a super robot, a thing.
I don't think you'll feel that way about him when you meet him.
I don't want to meet him.
What are you afraid of, Una?
I don't know. It's... When I first saw him, I thought how beautiful he is. And my heart went out to him to be dead so young. And then you said that he wasn't, that he was immortal. And the strangest feeling just washed all over me and grew inside. All warm and tingling, and I couldn't understand it, but I wanted it to last forever. Now you tell me he's only a machine. I don't know, it's unclean. Somehow I want to cringe.
Then you've got to meet him to get rid of that feeling.
All right. But only for you, Ralph.
Well, let me just set the instruments first. Just attach these electrodes. And step up the power. Watch, Una. Wake up, Mac.
Hmm?
Time to get to work.
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, Doctor, did I fall asleep again?
Not exactly. And cheer up, you won't anymore. Except when you decide to. Oh, Mac, I want you to meet my wife.
Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Tremaine.
How do you do?
Just great. I mean, you're really something to wake up to.
I told you he'd surprise you.
I'm not surprised. I'm frightened.
Of me? Why?
I don't know. I just don't want to... I'm afraid to be near you. I don't want to be near you.
Did I do something wrong, Doctor?
No. I'm the one. I just hope there'll be time enough left to set it right.
What does Dr. Tremaine mean by that last statement? And why should Mrs. Tremaine have this strange fear of this all-too-human humanoid? Or is Mac, the mechano-electric computer, something other than he or it seems. You're in for some surprising revelations in this bizarre history of the far-off future when I return shortly.
And another break. Hopefully this will be the last one.
Have passed. In the course of them, for whatever reasons of his own, Dr. Tremaine has tried to bring Una and his protege, Mac, together as much as possible. But Una still reacts to Mac with that strange, inexplicable fear. And the humanoid, although he obviously holds her in admiring awe, seems happy to have as few encounters with her as possible. But a rush of events are moving to a startling climax. A climax that builds rapidly as Mac visits General Varden at the palace, bearing a message from Dr. Tremaine.
What does he mean he won't design the robots I ordered?
I think he explained that in the message, General.
You mean this nonsense about not being able to build machines of war?
Well, if I remember, what he said was he can't. A can't in all conscience, I think, was the phrase.
I don't like your attitude.
I have no attitude, sir. I was only trying to set the record straight.
I find you insubordinate. What's your name?
Mac, General.
Mac who?
Just Mac, that's all.
Are you trying to make a fool of me?
Oh, no, sir.
Varden. General Varden, turn up your viewing screen so I know you're there.
Yes, Your Majesty.
That's better. I want to see you in my office immediately.
What's wrong, Emperor?
Wrong? Everything, you fool. I've just received a message from President Zorak of the Republic of Luvas. Your ship was identified on that last raid, and now he's on his way to our planet to blow us out of the sky.
Does he say when?
No.
Then with luck, I still can intercept him. I'll be right in, Your Majesty. You, did you hear that?
Yes, I did, General.
Then take this message back to Dr. Tremaine. You tell him to get his blueprints ready for my factory to go into production. I need an army of robots, and they only have to do one thing, fight. And you tell him also that he'd better conform, or his wife will be the one to pay the price.
Oh, Mrs. Tremaine.
Oh.
I'm sorry if I startled you.
Don't come near me.
Why do you dislike me so? Look, I've got to see Dr. Tremaine first, but I
would like... He's resting. I don't want him disturbed.
Well, it's important. I have a message from the general.
It can wait.
Oh, but you don't understand. You're the one in danger. The general threatened...
Don't have to worry about the general's threats. My husband got a promise for protection from the Emperor before he told him about General Varden's planning to build the robots in secret. My husband and I have nothing to fear from him. He should be under arrest by now. Does that satisfy you?
Well, yes, No.
What else do you want?
I'd like us to be friends.
So would I. But I don't think that's possible. But why don't you leave me alone? Just leave me alone.
But Mrs. Tremaine, Una!
It's all right, son. Mac, I should say. Don't bother her now. Come in the laboratory. I need to talk to you. Explain some things.
General, there will be no necessity to fight.
What do you mean?
I contacted President Zorak and made, shall we say, an arrangement.
Am I to be informed of it?
Worse, I've offered to return to him all his people who were abducted.
And that satisfied him?
Oh. I've also offered him you, as the criminal responsible for the brutal pirate raid, to do with as he likes.
And you trust him? Without me, there's no one to fight him. and after he took off with me as prisoner, he'd still devastate this planet till there was not a living, breathing human being on it.
Oh, he intends to do that, of course. They're all dying anyway.
They? What about you? You'll die with them.
Certainly not. He has promised me safe conduct to his country and the right to take my personal fortune with me.
So, you sold me out?
Gladly, just as you were planning to do to me as soon as you were ready with your new army of robots. Seize them, guards! I said seize them.
You really are a fool, Your Majesty. Just because these metal bodies are painted with the royal purple on their breasts emblazoned with your coat of arms, you think that makes them yours?
Seize him, my captains.
Oh, let me go. I am the Emperor.
We're the Emperor. Not anymore.
If you think you can take my throne from me...
I don't want your throne. Or you. From now on, the whole universe will be mine.
You won't get away with it. When President Zorak lands and frees me, he'll follow you with his fleet of ships.
He won't know where to find me. There'll be no one to tell him where I went.
The king is dead. Long live the general.
The reason you felt no fear of Varden, Mac, is because I didn't program you for fear.
Well, you mean, Dr. Tremaine, that every reaction I have, you built into me?
Yes. I picked a human model for you and tried to shape you as close to that model as I could, with certain exceptions.
Who was the model, sir?
Myself.
You, sir? Well, very proud, but why would you want to go to all that trouble to duplicate yourself?
Well, maybe because I had no other model I knew so well. And maybe because I'm dying, and every man reaches for immortality. That's a part of it, but not all of it. Not the real reason. And I made such a botch of it.
I'm sorry if I don't measure up, sir. I'm the one to blame. I got to ask you to help me, Doctor. I can't stand it any longer.
Oh, I'll help you in any way that I can.
Then unmake me, sir. Destroy me. Dismantle me.
Why?
Because I love her and she can't stand the sight of me. She loathes me. And I don't want to go on being knowing that. Why, Doctor? Why does she hate me so?
She doesn't hate you, Mac. Quite the opposite.
It's better if I don't believe that. There never was any hope for me because she's real and I'm only a copy. She's a human being and I'm no much better than a robot.
You are a humanoid. Something very special and unique. The first man of your kind in the history of time.
Still gives me no right to Una.
Why not? She is the same as you.
She... What?
When I said you were the first man of your kind, I didn't mean the first creation. The first was a woman. Una.
Una is like me?
Una is like herself. Or, if you wish, like my wife. My real wife. My first and only one. I put into Una all the things I recalled about my wife. Sweetness, laughter, some tears, kindness, and the beauty inside that only makes the outer look more exquisitely lovely. And then I brought it to life. But I made one terrible mistake.
What mistake?
When she came to life, she was so full of the joy of it, the sheer delight in being, that I was awestruck. I didn't have the heart to tell her that
she was just a machine.
Yes.
But you'll have to tell her sooner or later.
I know. But I'm a coward. One part of me that I didn't build into you, Mac. I keep waiting for the right time, but... What's that?
Front door, sir.
I mean, who would ring like that except... It's General Varden. We mustn't let Una open the door.
General Varden?
How nice of you to greet me.
Come, my love. You're leaving with me.
Let her go, Varden.
Stop right where you are. I'm armed.
Don't shoot him, please.
Don't, Mac.
It's all right. He can't hurt me.
I hit you point blank with the disintegrating ray.
Let go of Una.
Stay back. If you move one step closer, I promise you I'll turn the ray on her.
Give me the gun.
If I can't have her, no one shall.
Una!
I won't bother with the rest of you. Zorak is on the way here to blow you all to bits. I'll let him take care of you while I make my escape.
You won't get away from me.
Back. Stay where you are.
No, what have you done? I can't move. He'll get away.
Let him.
But he killed Una.
Don't be silly. He couldn't hurt her any more than he could you. You're not hurt, are you, Una?
Oh, no. When he fired, I was so afraid. I blacked out for a moment.
It's all right, Una. There's no need to be afraid anymore. He's gone.
And I'm alive. He fired at me point blank. I felt the shock, but I'm alive.
He also fired at Mac. And it had no effect on him?
But Mac is a humanoid. Then that means that I'm a humanoid, too.
Yes, child. Forgive me. I haven't had the heart to tell you the truth.
The heart? Oh, Ralph, you couldn't have told me anything more wonderful. Because now there's nothing between us. I can give my heart to Mac the way I did when I first saw him.
Una, my darling. Why did you stop me and let him get away?
I don't think he will. Listen. Zorak has caught him.
General Varden has opened fire. That means that Zorak will know he's been betrayed. If he defeats the general, then he'll bomb us all to dust.
I don't care as long as we're together, Mac.
You don't have to care. He can't harm either of you.
Oh. Doctor.
What is
it? The curse of this planet. Finally taking you. Come on, Una. Help me get him to bed.
What's happening? What's happening?
It's Zorak, sir. He destroyed General Varden, and now he's wiping the rest of us.
Not you and Una.
We don't care. We're together.
Of course you care. This fortress I built in the side of the mountain can stand, except for a lucky hit.
But the radiation afterwards
will not affect either of you. You will still live when all else is dead. Including me.
No.
My days were numbered anyway. I wanted children. Always. You were the best I could offer against fate. You must fight to exist.
Well, isn't that futile, Doctor? The two of us alone? One thing you couldn't give us is the ability to reproduce.
Of course I could. Stored in your memory banks is all I have learned. And what I learned is from the accumulated wisdom of man since he first started to reason. Deep in the mountains are stores of parts and transistors, and all you need to build in the image of yourselves. Your children, who in turn will build their images to become their children. Until, at last, the earth will be inherited again. Every new world that ever began sprang from despair and those who refused to stop hoping. Make this your new world.
Oh, Ralph.
Hush, Una. His life here was over. Listen.
What?
Listen. They've stopped bombing. The destruction's over. It's time to start building again.
Is there a moral in this story? Ask yourself,
The amoeba reproduces by separation. A flower by cross-pollinization. Sponges and spores in their own spontaneous fashion. The animal kingdom is not the only one and holds no royal prerogative. Who is to say that tomorrow, what we think of as a machine may not capture the future? It was the English poet laureate Alfred Tennyson who said, "For I dipped into the future, far as human eye could see, saw the vision of the world, and all the wonder it could be." Perhaps we have dipped even deeper than Lord Tennyson to glimpse a reflection of the universe. Could it be that man himself is not the total answer? Our cast included John Beale, Terry Keane, Gordon Heath, and Ian Martin. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
At least they weren't Adam and Eve. I don't think I could have stood it if they were Adam and Eve. And anyway, this does bring us to the last of the dramatic presentation portion of Night Transmission. Oh, and you can write me if you want at nighttransmissions@gmail.com. You can also drop by the website, which is www.nighttransmissions.com. Night Transmissions is one word, no space between the night and the transmissions. I keep some ancillary material and general show notes there. It may be worth checking out. From here on to the end, there'll just be some music.
I saw the knights in armor come and saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming. The archers split the tree. A fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was lying in a burned out basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for I was dreamed I saw a silver spaceship flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen ones. All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new
tiles, cats in a thousand assorted styles, cats coming home all wreathed in smiles after spending the night in a band. Have you seen my cat? She's a black and white. She squeezed out the door when I came home at night. She's usually back by the dawn's early light, but she didn't come home in the morning. Cats on the rooftops, cats on the tiles, cats in a thousand assorted styles, cats coming home all wreathed in smiles after spending the night in abandon. My neighbors say we should be dispossessed, 'cause she howled all night, they got no rest. She was entertaining an overnight guest, and she didn't come home in the morning. Cats on the rooftops, cats on the tiles, cats in a thousand assorted styles, cats coming home all wreathed in smiles after spending the night in abandon. I filled her bowl up with tempting chow, called her name loud as the law will allow, and all I asked was one meow, but she didn't come home in the morning. Cats on the rooftops, cats on the tiles, cats in a thousand assorted styles, cats coming home all wreathed in smiles after spending the night in abandon. Wait, here she comes, she looks a fright. Lord, she must have had one terrible night, but I never saw a cat with a smile so bright. She finally came home in the morning. Cats on the rooftops, cats on the tiles, cats in a thousand assorted styles, cats coming home all wreathed in smiles after spending the night in abandon. Thank you.
take her home. What's her appetite? She'll lay her on the throne. She got Betty Davis eyes. She'll take a tumble on you. Roll you like you were dice until you come out blue. She's got Betty Davis eyes. She'll expose you when she snows you. Off your feet with the crumbs she throws you. She's ferocious and she knows just what it takes to make it pro blush. All the boys think she's a spy. She's got Betty Davis.
Rip Van Winkle was a lucky man.